Titillating Sports with Rick Tittle. Rick Tittle is a genius, the best show ever. He's so wonderful, genius, the best show ever. He's so wonderful. Titillating Sports with Rick Tittle. Rick Tittle is a, he's so handsome, he's a genius.
All right, thanks for that, and thank you for that, Tiny Tim. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's very much my pleasure to welcome Dick Cavett to the show. He's here to talk about his new book, Brief Encounters, Conversations, Magic Moments, and Assorted Hijinks. This is available through Henry Holt Press. But, Dick, it's an amazing story, your life and what you've meant to TV and other things in general, because to me, you're the guy that sort of spanned the generations. I mean, here you were with the likes of Stan Laurel and Groucho Marx, taking us all the way through, you know, civil rights and the summer of love, all the way up to today's world. I mean, it's amazing your span of influence during that time and all the people that you've met.
I got it. It just made me tired hearing you say those. I know. It's been, it is remarkable, and it often doesn't seem like my life. How could all of this have happened to a kid who was born in Kearney, Nebraska, not that far from where Johnny Carson was in Iowa, and what am I doing with Orson Welles and Muhammad Ali and Katharine Hepburn and Marlon Brando and John and Yoko and, as you mentioned, Stan Laurel, of all people? It seems like looking at somebody else's life and thinking, I'd like to have tried that.
Well, Dick, I think it's a great story that both you and Johnny started off as Nebraska magicians. What is it about magic and all that corn?
Yeah, well, what are you referring to, the material now or the food product? What are the odds against two young magicians from Nebraska, some years apart? He was older than I. Mm-hmm. But and then ending up on television in the same town opposite each other, it's just statistically impossible. But we remained very good friends right up to the end of his life, thanks to the tobacco companies. And it was a cherished friendship. People thought we probably were not speaking, but we always were.
Well, now, Dick, when you got your start, you decided, I mean, you're working for Time, and you heard that Jack Parr, the host of Tonight Show, said he was always looking for new material, and you thought, well, I got some jokes, and you actually run into him and hand him some jokes, and that's really how it all started, right?
Yes, it was the essence of chutzpah, a name I didn't know in Nebraska immediately, a word, I mean. It's a preposterous story that would probably be rejected in creative writing class, that a guy making $60 a week as a copy boy at Time magazine sees Parr hates his monologue. It worries him so that I went home, wrote one, took it to him. Luckily, there was no security in those days, so you could go to 30 Rock and go up any elevator, and I knew the back one where Jack's office was, handed him a monologue, and got a job as a writer. It's just too preposterous.
Rick Tittle
sounds like a bad movie.
Rick Tittle with Dick Cavett. Now, he makes you a talent coordinator looking for new guests, and he tells you to go down and check out the stand-up act of a guy named Woody Allen. I mean, what was that like when you first laid eyes on him?
Yeah, explaining a bit, they didn't have a writer opening on the staff then, so Jack took me on and said, I'm going to have you book people, kid. It'll just be a while, and then we'll make you a writer. Mm-hmm. And during that, they said, go see this kid who wrote for Sid Caesar when he was 17, and he's breaking in an act at the at a posh nightclub in New York. And I hated him without having met him because he worked for Sid Caesar at 17. But then we became great friends and still are over all these decades. But he was having a hard time then. He hated performing. His manager said it was a good idea. And we hit it off immediately and have continued to do so. And he was an advisor to me. And when he was graduating from the little clubs in the village, and I was starting in them, he told me how hard you will find it to write for yourself. even though I could always turn in material fast to Johnny and Parr, often alienating the older writers on the staff who I didn't realize saw me as a threat. And here this kid came out on the stage, stood behind the mic as much as he could so it obscured his face, and having just vomited backstage from nerves, came on and did this brilliant act for 30 minutes where every line was better than the best line in any other comedian's act. Mm. And the audience talked during it, like at a convention when there's a boring speaker. They didn't pay any attention to him. Mm. And it just, I thought, what an outrage. But I did put him on the Parr show, and the rest is history.
Well, now, Dick, when you got your own show, and I say show, you had many of them, but when you got your own show, you were sort of the guy that was more cerebral, and you would have political people and controversial people, but the humor was always there, and people sometimes maybe forgot that you were a comedian yourself.
Yeah, when everybody called me that horrible name, and you know, you just have to say to yourself, sticks and stones, when someone calls you an intellectual, one of the worst things you could ever be called and hope to have a television career. But they did it because I was too naive, and I thought you were supposed to read the guest book. And I would read a 400-page book and have 7 minutes with the guest and realize, this is crazy. But no, people obviously have never seen a real intellectual if they think I'm one. But I, you're right. I set out to be a comic, nothing higher, nothing lower. And that's what I continued to be to a degree all through that, doing a monologue with varying degrees of success every night, and sometimes getting off a good ad lib.
Rick Tittle with Dick Cavett. Come more questions for Dick. Recently, in the last year or two, I saw you on cable on stage with Mel Brooks, and it was very entertaining, as you guys talked about. And you know, we love the yarns and the old stories and stuff. What's your friendship?
I feel sorry for anyone who never saw Mel Brooks and Dick Cavett together again. It can be untangled from the many aspects of HBO, and it may be the funniest hour you're going to see. And I say that not simply because I'm in it. But it was one of the golden nights. Mr. Groucho Marx told me that some 7 or 8 times in your career, you will have a magic night where nothing can go wrong. Everything is funny. The audience loves you. You love them. And nobody wants the evening to end. And that's what happened on that HBO special with Mel. In a highly different vein, I would encourage people to Google my Dick Cavett's Watergate, which appeared on PBS, where you can see, and I was amazed, I had nearly everybody from Watergate on those shows back then. I was obsessed with it, as the nation was, and lived to see the honor on part of the Nixon tapes, and it's on YouTube, of seeing the most powerful man in the world say, Cavett, what can we do to screw him?
And who was it? Was it Ehrlichman said, oh, we'll get him?
Well, what they did was, in fact, he did find a way, but I didn't find out about it 2 years later by sheer accident. Two members of my staff, speaking to each other, learned they had been audited at the same time back then, and the bastard had audited, the president, had audited my entire staff, hurting some of the people badly. And that was how the great criminal president that we had got his bitter and spiteful revenge.
Unreal. I have a question.
Somebody asked me if I felt sorry for him, who had seen Dick Cavett's Watergate. And I said, only in the sense that the poor man died never knowing if I was a Jew, which is what he wanted to know at one point.
Yeah, you know, just recently with those tapes released, and now we get to hear everything. You get to hear the homophobia. You get to hear carpet bombing stories. And it's eye-opening, to say the least.
Yeah, or ear-closing. I mean, he had the foulest mouth. Psychiatrists, some have pointed out, this had to do with his clear obsession with his masculinity, which we needn't go into here, but he was always saying he was a real man. An amazing man, because he was very brilliant. He was certainly smarter than any of several presidents before and after him, a great presenter at the Supreme Court as a lawyer, and an odd little man who came out of the womb screaming, "I want to be president," with a dreadful personality, an ugly face, and managed to do so by some miracle, and then, of course, screwed up.
Very eloquently said. I have a question for you, Dick, on my Facebook page. It says, please ask, this is from Carl, please ask him about the interview with Jimi Hendrix. And it is poignant because, you know, one of those stars that so brilliant and died so young, and yet you were able to actually meet him and let the country in on him.
This is true. It's funny. Many, many people asked me about Hendrix. He was supposed to come on the show Woodstock night, but he was still on stage the next morning, crashed into the motel for two nights of sleep, and then came on and did two brilliant shows with me. And my band, which had cream of the musical world in it, just were in awe of his technique, watching him rehearse in the afternoon. Tommy Kaye, the great legendary guitar player in my band, said he just did things on that instrument nobody can do and that can't be done. And yes, he died. And then another day I was standing at the same place in my kitchen when I heard the name Janis Joplin followed by overdose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strange looking back at the huge stars that I had on and people in all other fields. It's kind of a trite thing to say, how many of them are dead. And it's never Dick Cheney.
All right, let's end with on an up note. I love how the subtitle ends with assorted hijinks on your book, Brief Encounters. Can you share with us, off the top of your head, one of your favorite anecdotes
it's too not short to tell them, but there are a couple of crimes from my as a juvenile delinquent. There's sex and violence. I don't know why they're always linked. You know, the cops had to resort to sex. And sex in college today, a stunning article to many people on dreams and trying to figure out who authors our dreams, since we apparently don't, and the deaths of Johnny Winters, Sid Caesar, James Gandolfini, and a poignant Christmas story where a lovely evening be the tree with the dog and the snow falling outside turned to an unmentionable matter in a psychologically wounding way. Is that enough to intrigue people to look for my Christmas story?
Absolutely. The book, Dick Cavett, Brief Encounters, Conversations, Magic Moments, Assorted Hijinks. Jimmy Fallon does a foreword in it, and it's available from Henry Holt Press.
How about Jimmy Fallon doing the foreword in his busy life?
Well, I think it's only fitting that the host of The Tonight Show would be doing a foreword in your book.
Yeah, it is. It's a world coming together in some weird way. And Jimmy, whom I've watched for years and admired so, had time to write a funny and also moving, because of what he said about me, forward.
Well, listen, Dick. You know, as I'm 49. I grew up watching you as a kid, and it's an absolute joy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming by. Good luck with the book. I'm sure it's going to be a smash hit, and hopefully we'll talk to you again down the road.
Hey, you're good at this.
Oh, thank you. That's the best compliment I ever had coming from you. Thanks, Dick.
Okay.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come back in a second.